Welcome back to We're Live, Pal. I'm Double G alongside Andrew Zarian. It is December, the first week of December. Are you feeling the season yet?
I am, yeah. Manhattan is bumping, you know? This is my favorite time, you know, to go into Manhattan. I hate going in every day, but this is the time that I love. Everybody's out, everybody's drinking, everybody's eating, they're spending money they don't have. It's fantastic.
What is your work schedule like around holidays? Do you get some time off during Christmas time?
I'm off Christmas Eve. I'm off Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. But this is like the busy season in New York, you know? So like all my clients are busy. So everybody's very needy. The clubs are all busy. So I'm in Manhattan doing meetings and dinners like every night. So I'm generally, my schedule is crazy between October and December. And then January, and you could tell, but based on my tweets, you know, like every year I disappear around this time.
You tweeted about WWE today, though.
I did. I was surprised to see that stock performing the way it is, considering, you know, that they, and we could talk about this later, considering a lot of people thought it would be a free-for-all.
I don't know that this is why, but the one thing that is different from WWE and those other companies is that they're not losing money hand over fist on streaming. Like, that's the difference.
They're not.
Right?
No, they're one of the few. But there was a lot of people within Wall Street that believed that once Vince was gone, all hell was going to break loose and that stock was going to collapse. There was tons of people that believed that people were investing in the Vince McMahon idea, not this new thing. And that was not the case, luckily for WWE and luckily for the investors.
Yeah, I remember that being the worry for a while now, when Dave would talk about, you know, when people would say, when is Vince going to retire? When is it going to, what's the succession plan? Part of Dave's comments about that was they're really worried, like the investors are worried about what happens when Vince steps away. So it's, I mean, you know, they've been fine. They've been absolutely fine. Triple H and Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon, I guess they haven't lost faith in how they're doing. And they probably even, at least to a small degree, have a little bit more faith in the creative with Triple H on board. Even though, I don't know, I'm kind of iffy on it. But they have one really great storyline that everybody is super interested in. So that's a win.
Yeah, I think Nick Khan settled a lot of the nerves, you know, for investors, knowing his track record, which is fantastic. You know, Steph was at least a connection to Vince. You know, there was a point that when Stephanie exited, I don't think people thought that Stephanie McMahon would be coming in as, you know, there's so much back. There's so much more to the story than we all know as to how Steph came back, why she was, you know, essentially buried on her way out.
Super weird.
Very publicly, at least to me. So I found the whole scenario very chaotic and interesting, but I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what happens this coming year, because it's anything like 2022.
I mean, we were talking about this last week about if things are sort of all peaking at the same time, like this WrestleMania is going to be ridiculous with how many people they'll be able to bring back and how many stories will be peaking at that point. So yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Your tweet was about the stock doing well and the other two stocks not doing well, being Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery. And I'm sure there's more to it than just the idea that there's, you know, WWE doesn't have a streaming demand to create all of this content. You know, that's what they have the Peacock network for, and they get paid handsomely to just show their content there. And that was ultimately a pretty smart play by them, because imagine if the WWE network was still going and they're trying to figure out how do we get over a million subscribers and all that. And I think probably hardcore fans like the WWE network better than what they get on Peacock. But man, for them, what a tremendous business decision in hindsight.
Big time. Yeah, I actually did. You know, initially when they did this deal, it came out of nowhere that they were shuttering the network. People are very unhappy with it. Peacock is growing. I mean, they put out a report. They went from 15 million paid subscribers to 18 million. I didn't deep dive to see if those are free people that converted into, you know, paid subscribers to not get the commercials. But I do think it's very interesting that they are on a platform now that they can get they got over a million viewers for that, for the Saudi show, for Crown Jewel. You know, and those were wrestling. I mean, obviously, it's free for a lot of people. It's $9 for a lot of people. But those are WrestleMania numbers. At the end of the day, you know, that's a pay-per-view WrestleMania number, and they're doing it on Peacock. They never gloated about that million before for a pay-per-view. So obviously, they weren't hitting it. But now, yeah, you know that there is some massive gains for WWE being on that platform. You know, their user base is pretty large. So it's a Saturday afternoon. You're just putting something on. You put it on. And that's exactly what WWE wants. They want discoverability. And something that a lot of these platforms no longer have is that. It's very boxed in. You're only subscribing to what you want to see, and that doesn't allow growth. WWE moving over to Peacock has allowed some sort of growth, you know? And if you think about it, if they hadn't, what would that network look like coming out of the pandemic, you know, with the product being cold until Hunter took it over? You know, it would have been not so good.
I saw a number, I think it was 18 million that Peacock is at right now. But like you said, who knows if it's, you know, how many are paid and free and all that stuff.
Those are paid. That's 18 million paid.
Okay, that's paid. So that's good. I mean, it's not, that's not good in comparison to some of the bigger ones, but there is some growth there that is happening. So they're doing something.
Listen, for service, that's you know, in not doing financially great. I'll take that as a win.
Well, I mean, you know, I follow a lot of people and listen to podcasts about streaming, and they still think Peacock is like a joke and eventually going to have to combine with one of the other streamers to you know, that's kind of like the prediction is, you know, we have X number of streaming services, and outside of Netflix, there's going to be like combinations of these together just to make some sort of sense. But before we move on to wrestling, because, you know, the reality is right now, I don't know if anybody watched Raw and SmackDown, the most recent episodes. WWE is not doing anything right now. They know that they have some weeks until we get to Royal Rumble season. And so they're not really doing too much right now, storyline wise. We're kind of, you know, we're just walking on a treadmill here with stuff. So there's not a ton going on. We will get to some stuff with AEW, but going back to the Christmas thing, when's the last time you went to a holiday party?
Oh, man. Like a corporate holiday party?
Yeah.
Pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I have not been invited to any this year, and I don't know anybody throwing major ones.
So, the reason why I asked you that is because my company is actually having a holiday party this year. I think, excuse me, I think I've been in the office maybe five times all year long. But they're having a holiday party at the office, you know, not at the swanky bars that we used to go to in San Francisco, but very smartly, because we have this new office space that is not being utilized all that much because people are still working from home for the most part. So we do have a holiday party. And now I got to figure out, like, the last time we had a holiday party, I think, was 2020 would have been early, right before the pandemic, I think, right?
Yeah.
That would have been. And so now it is going to be actually end of 2019. So it's now 3 years later. And now I got to figure out, oh, wait, does this suit that I wore back then, how does it fit?
Still fit.
I've had to wear a suit in
how
long?
Have you gained some weight?
From that time frame, yes, I probably gained a little bit of weight, but it's, you know, from the pandemic and such, you know, where a lot of people did. But it's just like the thought of, oh, putting on fancy clothes, like, what is going on here? This feels weird all of a sudden to get back into that thing.
I've plunged in weight. I'm down like 20 pounds from like 2 months ago.
You're off the juice, man.
I know. I got to get back on it. I got to get back on it. I need 6 weeks, guys. I need 6 weeks. No, I'm just, you know what it is? Same exact problem. I'm wearing so many more suits now for all these dinners that I do.
Yeah, so it's kind of the reverse for you.
it's the reverse. I'm like, oh shit, I'm not fitting into these. So I totally cut carbs and I did like a crazy crash diet.
Crash diet? Because you weren't even heavy as it was. Like you're in pretty decent shape, I imagine, even with a few extra pounds.
Yeah, I try to stay in shape, but you know, like it's hard, and the older you get, and like my joints hurt, my hip really did a number on me, so I had to lose weight to take pressure off my hip.
Sure, that makes sense.
And it's helped tremendously. Like I'm almost like 100% now. Like occasionally I feel something, but if I'm like 10 pounds heavier, it gets really hard. Like I start feeling it.
Well, that's great to hear that you're almost 100%, because you know, we're doing this drive to get Zarian to the Cow Palace, and you won't have that excuse for Revolution.
No, the hip won't be an excuse. The hip won't be an excuse this time.
So, yeah, I'll report back next week. And you know what my biggest fear with this holiday party is? The amount of new employees that we have since I was regularly going back to the office is ridiculous. Probably... I can't even think. I mean, we definitely have more employees than we did. But man, there's probably like 200 people that I've never even met before. Now, all those 200 people are not going to be at this holiday party. It's localized to the Bay Area. We have offices all over the place. But you know, my biggest fear is when people come up to me at this holiday party and they know my name, and then I have to like be like, I don't know what your name is, but here's my wife. Let me introduce you to my wife. That is my biggest fear when it comes to this stuff. So I'm kind of like, oh gosh, this is going to be so embarrassing.
I'm so, you know what? Just have a couple drinks and say, you know, start losing your mind.
Oh man, it'll be fun.
Yeah, there you go, Josh.
Exactly. All right, let's get into some of this stuff. So William Regal, which has been a big topic of conversation for us, it looks like he's gone, man. He is headed back to WWE to work for one of his best friends, Triple H. And do you find it surprising that Tony Khan made sure to reference in this Q&A that he's hosting tomorrow that he's going to talk about this William Regal situation?
I think it's good. I think it's healthy for him to talk about it. You know, it doesn't. If it was any other sports organization, they would talk about it. They would mention, you know, him leaving the exit. I think Regal is a tremendous mind. I think it's definitely going to be a loss for AEW for sure. But you know, we heard the rumors. People in WWE have told me specifically in the last couple of days he's going there. I don't know if it's an on-air role or it's just behind the scenes. I think initially it'll be behind the scenes, but I'm shocked that he exited. I'm more curious about what kind of deal was in place to allow him to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we speculated last week, and I told you what, I believe I said it on this show, what my two thoughts were, which was one, that he had some sort of out if Triple H was ever to be in power. And then I don't even remember what my second one was, but that was always kind of like what I thought was, wow, like if you have this handshake deal and it's like, yeah, I want to come here, but if Triple H, you know, if he gets some power, I would love, you know, I want to go back there. I don't know that that's what it was, but it seemed pretty logical to me. I know other people talked about that as well. But so do you think that Tony Khan mentioned the William Regal situation in this Q&A because he kind of needs to babyface himself a little bit here, right? Because Triple H, when he posted that War Games thing, all of a sudden it made people start thinking, oh, WWE's getting one on AEW again, right? Like that was initially the thought. And so I wonder if he wants to get out in front of this to kind of babyface himself and be like, hey, this is why it happened. You know, don't listen to all of these other things, but we agreed and we're friends and X, Y, and Z. I feel like that may be the strategy here because usually he kind of, I don't know, he kind of hides behind some of these stories, and he's mentioned that a lot of it is because he goes by what the talent wants. But there's been lots of things that he has not been honest about, and he will no comment you about. And this one, he seems to be proactively saying that he's going to explain. So that's kind of what threw my, I guess, the cynical part of me come, the flags got raised there for me.
Yeah, no, I if this is what I do for a living too, right? I take bad situations for companies and I kind of guide them into their next move. I think this is a good move. Obviously, Regal leaving is a negative. Whether or not they had an agreement in place or not, having someone like Regal on your side is a benefit for sure. But, you know, with the rumors as to why he's leaving, right? Yes. We saw that EC3 had posted something saying that, he was told or he had heard, I don't know, firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand, but the maturity level on the management side was an issue for Regal. But you've mm-hmm. heard this from other people too. So I don't know if it's a pile on, whether or not it's true or not.
Yeah.
If you're Tony or you're AEW, you want to kind of get in front of this and be like, nah, that's all nonsense. He had a shorter deal. He had an option to leave when he wanted to, and he wants to leave.
Yes. Yes.
I'm envisioning that's what he's going to say. I don't think he's going to deep dive into, the real reason or whatever it is. But I think it's a smart move. Transparency. It works.
Did you see Brian Pillman's tweets about this?
No. What did he say?
Oh, let's see if I can find him, because there was a report and somebody had posted something about like, the young wrestlers weren't listening to Regal or something like
that. They never listen. I mean,
right. That's not surprising, right? That's not surprising. But Brian actually responded to that. And if I find the tweets, I'll read them directly. But my interpretation of his tweets was basically to say that he was saying, no, people were listening to Regal. Like he and Bryan Danielson had, when they were in the ring or doing stuff, like they had a group of people always watching, always wanting to learn. But it did sound like there was a group that maybe wasn't interested in that, and maybe that's where the story came from about, you know, no one wants to listen to Regal and such. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because like I think to Pillman, he was basically saying like, look, I'm trying to improve and I want, you know, and I was listening and I thought this was helpful and all of those things. So yeah, I haven't seen anyone pick up. I don't even know how I saw these tweets, but yeah, I just it's the old adage, right? Is these older guys have tons of knowledge and, you know, the younger guys don't want to listen because they kind of want to do their own thing or the business has changed or whatever it is. But that's kind of life. Like, I don't know how many people you have the opportunity to mentor, but that's mentoring, you know, in of itself is like giving the information, and some people are going to take it. Some people aren't. They may think that we're being a little safe on how we do things. So it's just interesting. Like, I don't know. I would think that if I was a wrestler with all the knowledge that William Regal had, holy cow, like I would just be like a sponge, right? I would just be like soaking everything up. But maybe some of the things that he was saying was against what they were doing or against how they were getting over or how they thought they were supposed to be working or whatever. And so we have that contradiction and then maybe that's something where you're like, okay, this is not for me.
Dude, I'll give you two great examples. Okay. Do you know how many times, and I'm sure you and Dave also have heard a gimmick like Orange Cassidy's could never get over on a national product, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Darby Allin could never get over on a major national product. It's impossible. Orange Cassidy can never be taken serious. You know what? The guy is over. He definitely is over with the fan base. Now, whether or not you're trying to reach a larger group with the definition of over, is he going to get over like Roman Reigns? No, he won't, because he doesn't look like Roman Reigns. He doesn't act like Roman Reigns. But there's a different level of this. But imagine how many people went to him and said, listen, dude, you got to cut that shit with the pockets in your hands and the sloth-like kicks, right? That shit is never going to be. Nobody's going to be into it. You're exposing the business. It's garbage.
Yeah.
The dude comes out to the biggest pop every week.
He does get the AEW audience loves him for sure. 100%.
They do, and you know what? That is his style. Like I was one of those people too. I was like, it's not for me. Thing is not for me. But you know what? It grew on me, and I look forward to him now every week.
You know the thing that I don't like about the act? Like I'm okay with what he does in the ring, and it's very clear that he's talented. A lot of people don't like his style because it's different, but it's very clear that he's a talented guy. The thing that I don't like is when they do these segments and it's like heel goes, "I want to fight you," and instead of him going like, "Yeah, I'm gonna fight you and I'm gonna kick your ass," he goes, whatever, yeah. I'll see you. And he leaves. And it's like, I this may be the traditionalist in me, but I'm like, I want to see the baby face like react in a strong way, right? But he does kind of the opposite. So he's different in that way. For me, that's I dislike that. But his act works for that audience. But you know the other thing, and somebody who's been cataloging this stuff will have a better actual answer than what I'm saying, that is he's often in the main event or on Rampage. And I'm not saying that the ratings issues are his fault, but he probably doesn't feel great to be the main event of the lowest rated Rampage ever, right?
Yeah.
Like, because that show on Friday was, I didn't think it was a bad show. There was actually news coming out of it.
Yeah, but I mean, do you want to see that main event? Are you going to stay up till, you know, East Coast, till 11 o'clock to watch that main event? After two hours of wrestling that you already watched, now you're in your third hour? No, you know, I have a very, my outlook on wrestling has really changed the last 5 years. I was very adamant that the things that I enjoyed is the truth for wrestling, and that's the way it should go because I felt connected to it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I talked to, over the last 5 years, I talked to so many people in the business now, and I, you know, we've become friendly with a lot of people. My viewpoint has totally shifted where it's not really my, like, I could still have what I want to watch, and that's Danielson wrestling for 35 minutes. I could get that. I could get a Omega match. But I'm open. What I liked is not necessarily what you like that I don't like does not mean that it's wrong. It just means I'm viewing it in a different way. And that's always been the story about wrestling. There were people that watch for the minis.
Yeah.
The kids love the minis, right? Wasn't that the thing in the 70s and the 80s? Why do you have the minis? For the kids. The kids love the minis.
They would have those as like special matches on the marquee.
As a special match. So, but there is a market for it. I think there is a market for having Orange Cassidy main event something with QT Marshall. Is it going to garner the most views on TV? No, it's not. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It doesn't mean that it was bad. It just means that it wasn't, you know, what people wanted to see at that moment.
Rough main event, though, right? If QT is pushed in the way that he's currently pushed, which is he loses every match, then there's no doubt about what's going to happen with him and Orange Cassidy for sure. Yeah. So, and I also the lumberjack stuff was it was pretty farcical.
Was that Mordecai? Was that Kevin Thorne?
That's what Brian said.
Yeah. I popped big time for Kevin Thorne. That was a highlight for me.
Okay, so I found the tweets.
Okay.
Justin Labar. Do you know Justin Labar?
Yes, I know Justin.
Okay. Justin Labar tweeted on December 4th. He said, "So what I'm picking up is Regal done with AEW, back to WWE soon, close with Triple H, but also his wisdom and coaching not appreciated, received the way you would think by some in AEW locker room who feel they have six-figure multi-year deals and Regal's advice is behind the times or behind them." Okay. So Brian Pillman decides to respond. He said, "This is not entirely true. There are several of us, myself included, who spent multiple hours before TV working with Regal, learning from him. Should there have been more? Maybe. But he and Danielson always had a solid audience around the ring before TV." So what that says to me is there was a group that thought that that was important, and there was a group who, for whatever reason, didn't. And there's no shame in either group, right? But
you know what? WWE has that too, right?
Oh, and you know, the people will, you know, people will go, oh, you know, in NXT, you know, they would always listen to Regal. Well, of course, because that's class. That's like what it's
direct,
for.
But it's also cool. Your direct boss.
Yeah, exactly.
He was their direct boss. If you did not listen to Regal, your ass was out of NXT developmental.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, it's probably a bunch of things. Like who knows? And
sure.
And there's lots of bits and pieces to this. And the one thing that I like is whether or not this is out of the kindness of Tony Khan's heart. It's like, you know, Regal, it has had a lot of health problems. You know, he's been in some rough times. Like on the Fight Game Media Patreon, me and John LaRocca were covering 98 Raw. And in every episode, in every issue of The Observer, I'm reading like, oh, WWE's unhappy with Regal. He's got some problems. They're sending him to rehab. So, like, you're talking about a guy who's lived, like, he's lived life. And for him to be happy and just do what he wants, like, that's what I care about ultimately.
Yeah, man. Listen, here's the truth, right? Let's say Dave says, Andrew, you're out of here, right? And I gotta go somewhere else. And I go to maybe Wrestling Inc. or I go to Fightful, right? But I go in and I'm like, you know, this was my home. This is where I was. If that opportunity comes to come back in some way, if Brian's like, no, Dave's gone. His pythons were going crazy. He wanted you out of here. You know, I might be like, listen, guys, I gotta go back. Those are my friends. That's where I'm comfortable. I understand that totally. You know, it's the twilight of your career.
Yeah.
You're not going to do this for another 20 years. You want to spend it with the people you like and that have
kids
a similar
there.
Thought process. His kid's there now. Yeah. So, of course, you would want to go. And I'm sure his kid being there plays a part in this decision, too. You know, obviously, I think this is a great addition for NXT. But here's the other thing that you know, in talking to a couple of people there, NXT is getting ready to change a little bit again. It's not, you know, this short term, you know, or long term developmental concept being on a national television show did not really cut it for them. And they know that they need more stars. They can't just have homegrown. I'm expecting some more names to go there. I'm expecting indie names to go there. I think 2023 is going to be very interesting for them. I this is my own prediction. This is my guess. Nobody said this to me. I think we're going to get the takeovers back in some capacity.
Thank God.
Whether or not it's the end of the year or what for next year. But they know that, you know, AEW's on the defensive now. And these little pieces chisel away at that, you know, and you're never going to prosper when you're constantly on the defense. You need that leg up. And they had it for quite some time with AEW and they did fantastic. Now, since January on, it's been, you know, numerous things that have happened. Sometimes it's the fault of others. Sometimes no fault of anybody else. This is what WWE sees. They see this. We've talked about the optics battle for a year now. And I keep saying that word because that was the word that was used to me. And it really highlighted their plan for the year. Mm-hmm. It's chisel here, chisel there. We're not in direct competition, but, you know, they're surely acting like it. And NXT, they took that loss. It was embarrassing for them. They thought that they would have some sort of advantage with NXT. They didn't expect AEW to be what it was. Internal experts assumed that it would be around a 500,000 viewers to 700 on the high end for AEW when they launched. And they blew through that. And I think that was the beginning of WWE's, you know, defensive play. And now they're in a better position and they're going to continue this chiseling away of talent if available. And they are looking at the indies again. And I think Regal would be the guy that fits there. Homegrown is great, but if you don't have a great core to teach these guys and everybody's wrestling the same way and everybody's running the ropes the same exact way, everybody's taking a back bump the same way, you know, and that kind of goes into what we were talking about, right? You watch a Kenny Omega match and then you watch a Darby Allin match and then you have Danhausen there. It's a variety of different styles. WWE, it's less of that, much less of that.
Yes, that is when WWE didn't have competition. It was very apparent because we would watch TV show after TV show after pay-per-view after pay-per-view. Same finishes, same DQs, same countouts, same ways to get the championship matches. And that's why AEW is so important, because as a wrestling fan, you want some variety, and AEW has been able to put it on the cable level. They've been able to use it to sell pay-per-views. So, you know, it's funny because I am pretty critical of AEW on a lot of the things, but at the same time, it's the only show that I watch just about every episode of, and it's the one that I want to succeed the most, because then it forces WWE to step up their game, which they have.
Of course.
And hopefully AEW continues to go up, and WWE has to continue to step up their game. So that's the bottom line for me. You know, why I'm, you know, I critique AEW because I watch it through the lens of a critic more than of a fan. And that's because I do these shows, and how when I do stuff with Dave, I want to be different. Like, I want to be really on the ball with some of this stuff. So I do watch it through a very critical eye. Okay. So one thing that you said was NXT was possibly going to bring back indies and go back and start to bring in names, you know, all the names that are out there. There's some names out there again. Like, WWE had like grabbed all of them, and AEW had grabbed all of them. But now there are a few names out there again that are out there to be grabbed. But I wouldn't imagine that a sell, like, to AEW talent that becomes available, you can't sell them to come back to NXT, right? Like that, like if you're AEW,
who you broke up for talent. A second. Who?
No, so if you're an AEW talent and you're a free agent, for you to leave and to go to WWE, you would think that it would have to be a main roster deal and not an NXT deal, right? Like that, it doesn't seem like there's going to be this AEW to NXT pipeline necessarily. It would have to be the main roster. That would only be the only thing that makes sense to me.
You know, okay, so here's a question. If you're Pillman, for example, right? You brought up a great example. I'm a big fan of Pillman's. Like, I want him to be so successful at this, because I see a lot of his dad, and, you know, I really thought they were going to go into this loose cannon gimmick a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came out with that Venom shirt one week, and I was like, oh, I wonder if it's like he's like doing like a double-sided thing, you know? He's getting a little kooky. do that, by the way, Brian, if you're hearing this, please.
Yeah,
turn heel, go nuts. But like a guy like Pillman, can he go to NXT and become a, you know, a major top guy in that company on the NXT side? I think so. I don't think, is it a lateral move? Is it a downgrade? I don't know how. I think the money makes a big difference if it's lateral or a downgrade or an upgrade. Yeah. I think it's more of a lateral for him. If not, if there's going to be more shine on him, why wouldn't you? You know, sure. Why wouldn't you take that opportunity, go to NXT, you know, learn that style a little bit, be on national TV still, but be positioned in a top program or closer to the top program rather than being on Dark.
But that is an admission that you're unhappy with the way that AEW is training you to go from from a national company, AEW, to go back to NXT, which is developmental. It is a step backwards. It's going to be a step backwards in the eyes of the fans as well. But maybe it is an admission that you don't like the way that you're being trained or how that program is working for AEW. So, I could see that, I guess. I'm just thinking like stars, right? I'm thinking of like an Adam Cole. Yeah. Like, there's no way an Adam Cole goes from AEW to NXT. Now, maybe if WWE comes calling with some big numbers, then yeah, because he did work for Triple H. Triple H did believe in him, but not backwards to NXT for anybody who's really valuable. It was more so my question.
But, you know, Gargano is a great example of this. Gargano's on the main roster. He's making a ton of money. His wife is there. He's having a great time. But where would Gargano have been if he went to AEW? Would he have been in a better position, or would he have been in a worse position? A lot of this is up in the air. You know, Ring of Honor, someone in our chat brought up Ring of Honor. I think Ring of Honor is a great example of this. Ring of Honor could be that thing that combats some of those younger guys from leaving because they're not positioned in a high feud or anything. But in Ring of Honor, you could use that as your NXT, but NXT plus. You know, you could have a guy like Claudio and Jericho show up and Danielson show up every couple of weeks. and do something cool while they're still on AEW, because you're not selling it as developmental. You're selling it as the wrestler's promotion. I think Tony, once he figures out whatever this TV deal is, which I'm hoping gets announced in the next couple days. I'm assuming it's... I would hope so, because you know what? This is your opportunity here. Listen, Tony would have announced it if it was there, you know, months ago. But, you know, this is your final pay-per-view of the year. Mm-hmm. You bought this company. You've done a couple shows. Okay, now what?
Yeah.
Are we going to continue to have, you know, half of the show? And I'm exaggerating here, right? Are we going to continue to have half of AEW programming dedicated to Ring of Honor talent and Ring of Honor championships? It doesn't fit for me. You know, I think it takes away a little bit more when you have so many of these titles on the TV and you're telling me, you know, great example, Chris Jericho is their world heavyweight champion and MJF yep. is AEW's world heavyweight champion. Who's a bigger star?
To the worldwide fan base, it's the guy who's the lead singer of a rock band.
I don't know. You know what? I got to tell you, I would say Chris Jericho is due to notoriety and legacy and everything else.
Got to be.
And what he did for AEW, you know, he's committed heavily to that brand. He didn't come in and just take a paycheck. So to me, Chris Jericho's the bigger world champion right now. I mean, MJF is still growing. So that's
okay.
That's a little bit of a detriment.
So let's fantasy book AEW's next TV deal. And I have no idea what's going to happen, but one thing I do think with HBO Max and Discovery Plus becoming this new streaming service just called Max. My goodness.
Mad Max. Mad Max Max Plus. You could keep adding, right? Max Plus.
Well, you got Max Caster, you got Maxwell Jacob Friedman, you got Max Old Headroom. That's the one that I want to see Max Headroom come back as the logo. Okay, so my guess, and the reason why I say this is because this is where sports are going. AEW is probably going to A, want to be, and B, need to be on the streaming service in some way. I think that's where things are going, right? You're going to pay X amount of money. Okay, well, we need something for streaming because we're trying to build up this TV show. We believe that your viewers will come to our streaming network. What if Dynamite stays on TBS and instead of Rampage, you get AEW presents Ring of Honor for your 1 hour every
on Friday.
Yeah. And Rampage becomes your Max streaming show, and even bump it up to 2 hours and maybe have more squash matches, maybe get rid of Dark Elevation and put some of those squash matches in. Have it be an actual flowing 2 hour show that
an HBO Max exclusive
has some connection to Dynamite. Cause that's one thing that they did this last week on Friday's Rampage, which I thought was smart. You had the Acclaimed interview with Billy Gunn, which I was very confused by the way, but at least we knew something was happening on Rampage. Then on Rampage, they set up the match for the Acclaimed and FTR, and then you're going to have to go back to Dynamite to watch that match. So there was synergy in those two shows, which often it surprises me how little synergy there is. You don't usually have something happen on Dynamite that you need to watch Rampage to get the follow-up and then go back to Dynamite to get the follow-up again. So yeah. I like that part of it. But
I do
make,
too, yeah.
Make Rampage a cliffhanger-y, you know, something happens on Dynamite, check. You need to watch Rampage to figure out what's going on here. I would like to see that happen.
You also have the option, and again, the chat room is, you know, giving me some great points. You know, ROH on Friday, you know, Dynamite on Wednesday, ROH on Friday, Rampage on Saturdays. That battle at the belts on a Saturday, that was a test, obviously, for something. I don't think the concept of battle at the belts was going to be a 1 hour quarterly thing, right? The original concept was going to be Clash, and that was a pay-per-view level network show. You could do that with Rampage and bump Rampage to 2 hours, like you said. Put it on the weekend, 6 o'clock, 6 to 8. You're not in prime time, or you do 7 and 9. You could do something different. I don't know what the programming on TBS and TNT are weekly, but there are opportunities to do something here. Ring of Honor should be a 1 hour show. It should not be a 2 hour show, but you know, position this in a different way. I like that. Do it on a Saturday, or put it on, do it on a Max exclusive on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, just, it was Robert's idea in the chat room. I want to give him credit for that. It was a great idea. I think you have opportunity, but it really depends on what the hell Warner wants to do at AEW, because they are in a cost cutting. They lost a buttload of money on this on Black Adam.
Oh yeah.
You know, this is somebody that they cut that the what was it? Batwoman, right?
Yes.
Or was it Batgirl?
Batgirl. Yeah.
I don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah, that movie was like they almost had already done. Spent,
it was like $80-90 million already spent. They said, nope, canning this. So I, you know, this is cheap, easy to produce programming for you. You're not investing tons of money. I mean, you're investing over the year, but you're recouping that with ad sales. You know, if you have a competent sales team, which is Warner definitely did or does or did, I should say. I don't, all those guys are gone now, which is that's the other part of the story that nobody's really talking about. A lot of these people that were there in 2019 and 2020, 2021 are gone from all these companies, Peacock, Warner, everybody. Everybody's shuffled around. So a lot has changed in media. And for the last couple of years, we've only spoken about first round programming being such a necessity, sports first round programming. But then you hear, you know, Warner Discovery say we may not need the NBA.
I think that was I don't believe
negotiation.
That.
I know, but it's
I think it was I think it was like, you know, Zaz trying to make a comment that gets picked up by the street to where they believe he's being way more responsible than the previous, you know, folks. And God, they need the NBA. They need the NBA bad. If they don't have the NBA, you know what's going to happen? Bye-bye TNT is going to happen if they don't have the NBA.
Well, it's redundant programming, right? What the identity of TNT and TBS are intertwined, for sure. You know, here's a question for you. Where do you think AEW would be if they never moved to TBS? They just stayed on TNT. Do you think the numbers would be higher right now?
I don't know. Do you think it matters? I don't know if it matters or not.
I don't know anymore, and I'll tell you why. I don't watch, like, I don't channel, sir. I don't have cable. I have YouTube TV.
Yeah,
so it's
Exactly. Same thing with me.
But we're still the minority in this when it comes to, you know, television viewership. I know Brian's in the same boat as us. He has YouTube TV, so he just watches. We should all just share an account. We should get an Observer YouTube TV account.
Share, well, you know who, you know,
thing started at $40 and now it's $90 freaking a month.
I know. You know who has not only DirecTV, but also Comcast?
Who?
Dave has both still.
Why?
So
what does he get on one that he doesn't get on the other?
I think there's some, either it's either some channels or like the time in which things were shown. That's why he had the DirecTV.
Oh, because he could get DirecTV. He could get East Coast and West Coast.
Yeah, so he could watch Raw at 5 instead of at 8. I think that's a lot of what it was. But yeah, he still has both. Like, because sometimes when I go over there, I'll be like, oh, why are we on the Comcast box? Like something that's like, oh, like DirecTV doesn't have this pay-per-view, so we got to order Comcast.
Interesting. There has to be a better way.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately. Like, that would be interesting. We're like these, you know, we're these folks using these new TV, live TV apps. Yeah. There should be like an Observer discount. Like we you know, there's like Tony Leader buys the 10 pack and we all pay into the 10 pack.
Yeah, Tony. Yeah, Tony. Buy that 10 pack.
Wait, by the way.
Numbers coming out, by the way. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no. Oh, are you talking about Raw?
Yeah.
So, you know, back when you used your little analogy about you getting fired by Dave and then being able to come back, Was that a little bit of a subtle hint that the War of 24 was actually going to be MJF and Andrew Zarian? Like, does it sound like there's a little meaning behind the meaning there?
Well, I better get those scoops going, shouldn't I? I haven't dropped anything in God knows how long. You know what it is? It's such a crazy time. Like, I call you and I called, you know, I'd message Brian or like, and I'd be like, oh, did you hear this? Like, I just haven't had the time to deep dive and to confirm and to double check. Like, you don't want to get burned like that goddamn TV 14.
Yeah. Exactly. Wait, is this raw number real that I'm seeing?
I think I'm trying to find this number. Brandon Thurston, which is my go-to for these numbers, has not dropped anything.
He's the one that I believe.
Yeah, so I'm waiting to see where these come from. But if that is true, that's very low.
I don't. A bunch of people just decided not to watch TV that night. Low. That was such a crazy number. So I'm not. I think just for people listening, there's an audience number that is out there for Raw that is conspicuously really low. And that's what we were kind of wondering about.
I got to tell you, though, man, 2022 was a one of those big years in wrestling, right? It's up there now.
Oh, yeah. I feel like the last 19, 20, 21, 22, they're all like giant years.
19 was a giant year. 20 was a big story because of the pandemic. Coming out of the pandemic, 21 was a big story. 22, Vince's demise, I guess, and everything else that happened, big story.
CM Punk. 90,
and then I'm thinking like 97 was a big year. 98 was a big year for stories. We've had these happen back to back. CM Punk, I mean, huge, right?
Yeah.
Who saw that happening?
Maybe some people in the AEW locker room probably saw that happen.
You know, I'm waiting for Dave to put
maybe
out
not
that,
the way that it that, did.
I know. Maybe some people in the company. I'm waiting for Dave to put out that 2002, yearbook and the 2001 yearbook.
2001 is the one that I thought he was going to go to, but
I do hope so too.
It sounds like 89 is next.
89, but do you want to talk about what he just released?
Yeah.
Let's talk about for it.
I actually got it. I'm shocked. How fast I got it. It's 95.
And you're going to say, why 1995? Why is that such a big year? The Monday Night Wars, right?
Yeah. Yes. So
that was the beginning.
I just mentioned that John LaRocque and I do this podcast reviewing 98 Raw. So we did 97 and 98 Raw, and we're like, okay, we want to do something different. And our first idea after that was 96 Nitro. And so that book, I was so happy that Dave released that book. So I'm like, oh, now I have the, you know, now instead of digging through the observers to figure out where he starts talking about Nitro, we just have the whole story and I can use that for the podcast that we're doing for 96 Nitro. So very happy that that book came out. But what do you remember? Okay. Where were you in 1995 as a young wrestling fan? Like, what were you into?
I was obviously heavy WWF, but when Nitro started, I started the forums. So I remember was 11, 12 years old, right?
Yeah.
11, 12 years old. I always had a computer and I was very tech savvy. So I would go on the message boards, like the BBSs, the news groups, and then I would read, and I specifically remember people talking about the Observer and like, talking, Dave Meltzer said this in the Observer, and they would copy and paste like the entire freaking thing. all 80,000 words of the Wrestling Observer would be copied and pasted. But I remember Luger's exit being such a big deal, and I as a fan, as a kid, right? I was like, why would he do this? Why would he leave? Because just the year prior, like, he was going to become the world champion and beat Yokozuna at that SummerSlam, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So to me, it was that was the beginning of like my obsession with, you could read, there's news about this.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was a big, you know, 95. I'm a Northeastern kid. I grew up in New York. Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. That's all it was for me. Those were the guys.
So it looks like Brandon has posted different number.
Okay.
His number is way different than what we saw.
Okay. Yeah, but I think that was the second hour he posted, right?
So I have from him, WWE Raw last night on USA Network, 8 to 11, 1,536,000 viewers, 0.41 in 18 to 49, number six cable original. That's what I see from him.
Yeah, so I'm curious what the quarters are here.
Oh. That's going to be a tough story. I see what you're saying. I see that the third hour is what is the number that everyone is looking at, which is 1,000,000.
Oh, here it is.
60,000.
Yeah. Let's see. Here it is. Is this the number? 1.26 million, the lowest for the third hour. I can't imagine this is a... that's very low if that's true.
Yes.
That's shockingly low. Like something had to have happened.
You watched? Did you watch?
I did, but I watched abridged. I didn't watch. I watched the abridged version. I didn't see the whole 3 hours. So I don't know where it fell apart.
Because I watched and I was like, I watched the Hulu cut and I was like, what is going to be the main event? And when the main event was Alexa Bliss versus Nikki Cross versus Becky, I was like, they do not care about the end of the show.
But isn't that the conversation that people are talking about? It's fascinating to see that because they're loading up the first 2 hours and then hour three is dwindling. It was never like that historically. The final hour of the show was a main attraction of the show. You wanted the eyeballs, but you know, we're going back to that Hogan Saturday Night main event feature where he's the main event. The first match is the main event, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Not necessarily they're doing that, but
I mean, that's how Saturday Night Live does it too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the last hour sucks.
Yeah. The last 30 they put like the stuff that is not the greatest at the end. Wow. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Let's quickly pivot because we only got 8 minutes here. If folks have a few questions, maybe we'll throw them up. I like the chat going today. It's really fun. But last thing, you know, just kind of, I guess we should preview this ROH pay-per-view. And are you gonna watch this ROH pay-per-view?
Yeah, man. 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Love it. Love early pay-per-views. There's nothing more that I seek out than a afternoon wrestling pay-per-view. That is my happy place. I already told my wife. I'm like, listen, don't make any plans for this weekend, please. 4 o'clock, there's a pay-per-view. She's like, what do you mean there's a pay-per-view at 4 o'clock? I'm like, no. This is a special moment for me. I get to watch wrestling like I'm on the West Coast and have a normal evening and function rather than wanting to, you know, cry myself to sleep that I stayed up till midnight watching this pay-per-view. I envy you guys. I don't really get too much West Coast envy. There's a lot to envy the West Coast for, but I don't really get too much. But that is that main thing. You guys get to watch a pay-per-view and then live your life.
Yes. Yes.
While I'm crying in a corner here.
It is one of the benefits. Now, a benefit for you is that the NFL doesn't start at 10 a.m. in the morning, so you can kind of not worry about...
See, I'd love that. I'd love that.
Yeah, but what if you were out the Saturday night before and you're just like groggily kind of getting up and then 10 a.m. you got to start eating food while you're watching football?
Well, I'm not eating. I haven't eaten in like 6 weeks, so...
We do have a question, but I don't have the ballot up. Darius wanted to know who we think's making the Hall of Fame. If I had the ballot in front of me, I would give my quick guesses, but I don't have it in front of me.
Ah, crap. We should have had the ballot in front of us. I mean, I submitted my votes. We could talk about it next week, right? We could spend some time.
Yeah, and I'll probably do something with Dave on Friday for our show. And we're going to go through everything and we'll do it on the YouTube, the live streaming subscription service. We'll do that live and then we'll also have the podcast up. But yeah, we'll dig in really, really deeply into that. It's really fun to do if you're like a stats person for sure.
So I got a funny story here. I know, you know what? I'll skip it. I'll save it for next week. We'll go into Ring of Honor. Oh, and okay. NXT is right after that show too.
NXT is right after. Okay. So, is this a $40 pay-per-view card for you, or does this kind of feel like, I don't know, I wouldn't say that this is dynamite or not, but it feels more like a TV show. Some of these matches, I think, are better on a TV show than on a pay-per-view. So Swerve in Our Glory versus Shane Taylor and J.D. Griffey. That was kind of put together at the last minute. I like the fact that Shane Taylor and Keith Lee are in the mix. But as a match, we don't, you know, we haven't seen Shane Taylor get like some big wins on TV to set up that match. So it feels a little bit more about what they do on their television. Daniel Garcia against Wheeler Yuta. That's a really good match. We've seen it a few times. I think it'd be great on Dynamite as well. Mercedes Martinez against Athena. Nah, that's all right. But here's the weird one. Samoa Joe against Juice Robinson. Where did that come from?
I know. Out of nowhere. They did nothing to promote Juice as being there and doing stuff. I mean, obviously, to me, this means, okay, this is a good way to take the title off of Joe so he could continue his feud with Wardlow on the main roster. And now you have a comparable star like Juice Robinson holding that ROH TV title for Ring of Honor to represent Ring of Honor. I think that's the better way to do it. I think Samoa Joe being in Ring of Honor, Samoa Joe's an established national name. Juice isn't yet. I mean, listen, I absolutely love him. He's fantastic. But Joe is an established national name. He should be in the mix. Samoa Joe, MJF. Samoa Joe, Kenny Omega. Why is that not happening? Samoa Joe Danielson. I mean, the list goes on and on, but this might be a good way to kind of take him off that Ring of Honor side and put him on AEW.
I've just been watching Samoa Joe and Wardlow and Will Hobbs have these conflicts. And so I just assumed that we were going to see more of that. And then Juice Robinson just popped in and was like, hey, guys, I'm here. It's Juice Robinson, and I'm going to be on this ROH show. That was the promo, though. Hi, guys. I'm Juice. I'm going to be on this ROH show. Watch me wrestle. $39.99.
And then we got Jericho Claudio.
Okay. I like that as a match, for sure. However,
but
if we knew this is where we were going, why does Jericho pin Claudio in that four-way?
Yeah, I know. And we saw this already. You know,
so I think the match is gonna be great. These guys are gonna make sure to put on a main event match that I think is gonna give the fans their money's worth. So ultimately, I do think the pay per view will be worth the $40. But the
where
booking,
are they?
You mean like where are they having the show?
Yeah,
isn't it in Texas somewhere?
There, how big? I mean, how are the tickets? Has it sold?
Good question. It's in Arlington, by the way.
Arlington, okay.
I thought you had WrestleTix bookmarked at all times.
I do, but you know, I don't see him putting this out. I didn't see.
We're assuming it's a he and not a her.
Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm WrestleTix. I told everybody last week. Nobody even said anything. I'm WrestleBoats. I could be WrestleTix.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. Next week, though, we'll have a little bit of a recap. I don't think I'm going to get the show, though, because I'm holiday partying it, and so I won't be able to watch the show. But, so we'll be back next week as we kind of close down this year with where wrestling is going. And we have Winter is Coming, but we'll be able to preview that next week. So, all right, for Andrew and producer John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.